campaign 2010 proved to be an historic election for the Republican Party and a decisive defeat for President Obama and many of his fellow Democrats.
Today, state legislatures across the country, the majority of them Republican, draw congressional district lines to maximize their party's advantage. That had particular impact after the Republicans dominated the 2010 midterm elections.
In North Carolina, Republicans are accused of giving their party an overwhelming advantage in the past decade.
Gerrymandering is the manipulation of voting district lines, usually to give one party an advantage over the other.
This is perhaps a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Democrats not just to reverse the damage that happened in the Obama era to the party and to the maps, but to take full advantage of what we're seeing right now with one of the weakest incumbent presidents perhaps in our lifetime.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, Natasha Kurecki on how, as President Trump trails in the polls, Democrats not only see a chance to win back the presidency and the Senate this November, but also the opportunity to reshape electoral maps across the country.
Some election nights are more fun than others. Some are exhilarating. Some are humbling.
So in 2010, these were the first midterms after Barack Obama was elected president. Republicans just ran the table.
Angry voters flocked to the GOP, which will take control of the House of Representatives. CBS News estimates that.
And it happened to be a census year, which means there is reapportionment in all the states. So there is a redrawing of the congressional maps. At the time, Republicans just won a ton of governorships and state legislatures. They won a bunch of House seats, and they were put in control of redrawing the maps.
In 2010, Republicans in Wisconsin redrew the maps, and in the next election, despite receiving only 47% of the vote statewide, Republicans won 61% of the state assembly seats.
At the time, the party was really sour with Barack Obama. They said he focused too much on himself and not enough on down ballot races, on the party, on keeping lower levels of government in Democratic hands so that they remain in power or at least had a seat at the table.
So now we're in a census year once again. And on top of that, we have a presidential election. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is Democrats have a chance for a do-over. It means that after the census, there's going to be some states that might lose congressional districts, but there's going to be a lot of states that gain congressional districts, Texas being one of them. And that is why Democrats nationally are trying really hard to make sure that they win at least one chamber in some of these states that tend to be more favorable toward Republicans so they can have a seat at the table when redrawing the maps. The other point I'd make is there just seems to be much more of an awareness on this issue across the board. If you ask almost any Democrat, they'll talk about this. They'll talk, you know, just off the top of their head about what's happening in Kansas and what's happening in North Carolina with the state house race, because they're very aware of it. And, you know, we talked to several people who are very involved in this and said they can't believe the amount of out-of-state money that's coming into places like Pennsylvania, places like North Carolina and Texas, not for the presidential campaign, but for these state house races.
What are some of the specific races you're watching, and how are things looking for Republicans and Democrats in them at this point?
Well, in a lot of these states, Republicans are in a very, very tricky environment. Particularly at this moment, you have COVID coming back. You know, there's this huge resurgence happening across the Sun Belt in some of these states that are must-win states for Donald Trump, including Arizona, Florida, and Texas. But specifically in Texas, the state house in Texas is one where Democrats feel that they can make some inroads and possibly win back. In fact, Karl Rove, who was sort of the mastermind of helping win GOP control in a lot of these states, is now helping advise a super PAC in Texas to help maintain control of the House in that state. But more broadly, what we're seeing is Democrats feel like this is a moment of a lifetime for them. And that is because you have a few things happening at once. One, you have the once-in-a-decade census. But two, it's once-in-a-two-decade occurrence, which is it happens to be in a presidential year. And on top of that, right now, they feel that Trump's flailing, and he's bringing down the party with him, and they believe that there could be a rout. And what that could put into play is Democrats just sweeping across even very unfriendly territory in red areas. And they could end up being in a position where they're drawing these maps and they're putting into effect for the next 10 years a very, very blue-looking map.
Would you say, even though everyone's eyes are on the presidential election, that these local and state elections that could affect redistricting are more consequential than what's happening on the national stage?
There's definitely an impact in a way that could end up, you know, maybe influencing you more in your day-to-day life because it's your state. And, you know, as we've learned through COVID, as we've learned through these protests over the last few months, what happens in your states and the laws that your governor puts into effect and your state legislature or Supreme Court hold up can impact you a great deal. It can mean whether you can go to a restaurant or not. It can mean whether you're wearing a mask, whether you feel like you're being protected right now. So yes, I would say it's incredibly consequential on a local stage.
What message do you think Joe Biden needs to have to help with these down ballot races for Democrats?
Well, I think particularly if you're looking at states like Texas, the thing that I heard different lawmakers there talk about, what was sort of scaring the swing voter, the voters that moved away from Trump and maybe are thinking about going toward Biden, is that they're, you know, they're turning their backs on Trump. However, they're also sort of scared by some of these protests and this whole, you know, controversy over the statues and where do you stop with the statues? Which ones do you tear down? You know, is George Washington free game here? And I think to the extent that Joe Biden wants to portray himself as moderate, which is what he has done this whole time, I think he is wise to stick to some of the messaging, which he has been doing, which is not too far left, because those are the voters he ultimately has always said he wants to go after. And I think in states like Texas and Arizona and Florida, if he is trying to attract the voter that was for Trump, sticking to a more moderate message is the way to do that.
Natasha Kurecki, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Also today, the number of confirmed coronavirus deaths in the U.S. has topped 130,000. According to researchers at Johns Hopkins University, that's virtually double the number of people who've died in Brazil, making America's the largest death toll in the world. The U.S. also still has by far the highest number of cases of the virus globally, with more than 2.9 million confirmed infections. The second largest number is in Brazil, with over 1.6 million, followed by India and Russia. This comes as hospitalizations for coronavirus are rising in Florida and Texas. In Miami, the city's mayor reimposed restrictions on Monday, issuing an emergency order to close all restaurants and some other indoor places like vacation rentals and gyms nearly 2 months after they were allowed to reopen. And the Supreme Court has unanimously ruled that states can require members of the Electoral College to back the candidate who wins their state. The ruling, which comes less than 4 months ahead of the presidential election, leaves in place laws in 32 states and Washington, D.C., binding electors to vote for the candidate they promise to support, and allows states to remove or punish so-called faithless electors who don't stay true to their commitments. Faithless electors have not been critical to the final outcome of a presidential election before, but that could change in a race decided by just a few electoral votes. In 2016, 7 of the 535 total electors cast votes against the popular vote winners, Most of them were part of an unsuccessful effort to seek out someone who could deny Donald Trump the presidency. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And to stay up on all of the latest on the coronavirus pandemic and the November election, sign up for the Politico Nightly Newsletter at politico.com/newsletters. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.